This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Mental health care in the United States has changed quite a bit in the past 200 years. In the 19th and early 20th centuries, state hospitals and asylums housed large numbers of mentally ill people. But definitions of what constituted mental illness were often vague and included conditions like epilepsy and PMS. In the 1950s and 60s, the government started to push toward deinstitutionalization of mental health care, and that meant that many people experiencing mental illness were released into the community. Unfortunately, many ended up on the streets. Well, a new show on stage in Raleigh explores life inside an asylum in the mid-1960s, where many psychiatric hospitals were being closed down. But it's not a traditional theater piece. Asylum is a work of aerial theater in which there is no dialogue. Performers use circus-style choreography to tell the story. The show is on stage at the Murphy School Auditorium in Raleigh through Sunday, November 1st, and we get a preview today. Joining me first are the show's co-writers, Kendall Riley and Nikki Miller. They're also the co-founders of Only Child Aerial Theater. It's a Brooklyn-based theater company, and they teamed up with Raleigh's Burning Coal Theater to make this show. Kendall and Nikki, welcome to State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thank you so much. We're excited to be here.
It's good to have you. Start us off by explaining aerial theater. What is it, and what's the theory?
Well, aerial theater, we think of it as the combination of two forms that have already been established. Aerial is pretty much any. It's traditionally associated with circus, but it is any time a body is in the air, whether that's by harness or a different apparatus where the actor is actually holding on to unharnessed and holding on themselves. And that can include silks or rope or trapeze. Theater is, as we know, the other form. The combination of the two, we're very interested in combining the athleticism and the acrobatics of aerial theater, the risk that involves, and the heightened stakes with the narrative storytelling of theater, and seeing what could be what each individually offers, and then together what the potential is.
Yeah, it's a kind of choreography in a way, and it's spectacle, of course, and so it attracts our attention, yes. But also, I mean, creatively, you're allowed to use more space than you would ordinarily on a stage, right?
Exactly. It uses the vertical space as well as the horizontal space, and we've always felt that it was a shame to see a performance that was pretty much constrained to just the ground when we have this huge potential for telling stories in the airspace.
Well, Nikki, tell us about this particular story and the inspiration behind Asylum.
Yeah, well, Kendall and I had made a handful of small pieces with Only Child before this particular show, but we had come across some photographs of an abandoned institution in upstate New York about 2.5 years ago, and it was really striking to us to see all of the debris, but also the materials that people had left behind, seemingly without care to need to keep them. And there's made beds and there's medical records strewn about. And we started being curious both about that history, but also about the people that might have been there and about the emotional experience of that type of abandonment, basically by a system that was intended to be a caring space. You know, asylum means a place of safety. We have all of these very haunting associations with the word now, but we were interested in trying to represent that purgatory in the metaphor of the suspension of aerial apparatus and sort of the physical movement that's possible with that.
And you were also inspired by a book, The Lives They Left Behind. Is that right, Kendall?
Yes, we various sources led us to in our research, but this book is it's a compilation of about 25 histories of people who were in an institution in upstate New York based on the suitcases that they later found in the attic of this space. And in the same way that we came across all these remnants of people, we read this book and were very much inspired by putting together the pieces that we didn't have.
Then did you do some research? Tell us more, Nikki, about what you found about sort of asylums and state institutions in the 60s.
Yeah. Well, it came about that we stumbled upon the 60s actually later in the process. We started earlier in history looking at the 1800s, reading Nellie Bly's 10 Days in a Madhouse, learning a little bit about Dorothea Dix and her advocacy. But as we did more research, the striking shift in the 1960s and 70s of the public outcry that basically happened when people realized that these places were becoming really overpopulated and ultimately that the diagnoses people were getting to go to these places were not necessarily appropriate. We were really interested in that being just a nice time period to represent a lot of the themes that we wanted to explore in the
show. Yeah, it's interesting how these themes come around over and over again. I mean, the first problem you have, and it's now we're seeing it in our criminal justice system, right? Our prisons are overcrowded, so we're going to start looking at the diagnosis, right? The sentences, what are the crimes they're in for? Oh, let's change those. Epilepsy is not a mental illness anymore. That's going to reduce the crime. And, of course, it was rightly so. It's the theory going in. And the second point is that the people in these institutions are something other. I mean, if we're talking about a place like Charlotte or Portland or Cincinnati saying, well, the fact that you've been arrested for a crime is enough for us, don't go there anymore. Let's not go through all this court shenanigans and find out if you're really guilty. You're an other if you have been diagnosed. And I think that's probably central to sort of what you're finding in
exactly.
treatment then and the kind of housing. So then let's come back to aerial theater. I mean, is there a way in which it better represents the story that you're trying to tell?
We think so. And this still feels like very much an experiment, this new form. But there's so much... the stakes that are involved when you put someone out of their comfort zone, it brings up all this emotional inner life of the actor, but also the character. And I think that the audience, in watching this, automatically, maybe unknowingly, takes on the emotion of the performer because it is scary. You know, there's the fear, the trust that is involved, the relationships that you develop with your performers, your co-actors. I think that the richness of that is apparent to the audience, and hopefully it is also one with the story that we're trying to tell.
Tell us more about the story, Nikki.
Yeah, I'd also just piggyback on that and say that we weren't interested in doing like a history report with this show, that we wanted to do something that was a little bit more poetic. And so that's a big reason why the aerial was a huge priority, and also the music and the projection work. But the story is one that we devised as a group. We had done a series of workshops in New York before we got to Burning Coal. And then once we arrived, we got to team up with Dion and Michaela, who are going to be joining us in a little bit too, and then also some other local designers. Basically, it just follows four patients and a staff member in an asylum and goes through the cycle of the essentially slow burn of the fall of the space and of the trust of the people inside. And there's also some flashback scenes where we learn a little bit about the characters that and why they ended up there and what their lives were like before they arrived. And again, it's none of it's intended to necessarily explicitly say any kind of point, you know, a political agenda point, like we feel this way mm-hmm. about it. It's more just this is the best we can do to represent the emotions associated with what this experience might have been. And what does that make you feel? And then what does that do to your opinions or your interest in learning about it?
And I think that's a great point, that through art, what you're doing is exploring what maybe in politics we ignore, which is the fullness of the person. If I treat you as something other, a mentally ill person or a criminal, I get to treat you another way. In art, I think what you're dealing with is a whole person, and therefore the political agenda has to take a back seat to developing the fullness of the person. So we have a couple of the actors who will embody those people with us now. Michaela Sicoccio plays seven different characters throughout the course of the production. Michaela, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
And Dion Relaford Lee is also with us. He plays a character named Chris who lives in the asylum. Dion, good to have you here as well.
Oh, thanks.
Michaela, let's talk about playing, first of all, seven parts. And there's not a lot of dialogue in this, right? I mean, this is mostly a wordless play.
There is no dialogue except for two recordings, historical recordings, and then there's a song, which I sing. There was, luckily, with seven characters, I didn't have to memorize a whole lot of lines.
Well, no, but you have to now convey everything through your body, which as an actress you've learned to do. But that's a lot of then nuance and subtlety that all has to be conveyed through expression and your body.
Yeah, that was the best part of what I got to do, was finding really nuanced physicality and drawing out in very short amounts of time, because I'm not on stage for each of these characters for very long, but finding a way to convey in my body how old I am, where I'm from, where I'm going, my relationship with whoever's on stage. It was a fun challenge.
And you're hanging from the ceiling.
Sometimes, yeah.
Dion, tell us about your character.
Okay, Chris is, I think he's the light of the asylum. Everyone has a very heavy story, and his is, it's serious and it's heavy, but he brings joy and lightness to the asylum. I think that he is the one that's, like, really messed up and can't function on his own, so he really needs this place, whereas some of the other characters could probably function in society to some capacity. Chris can't do that at all. He has a fascination with fabrics, so he plays in that a lot. He's very grounded. He's close to the floor. I do a lot of work with the other actors, but also closer to the floor. So I'm not in the apparatuses as much. But I think that's really symbolic to how rooted he is to this place, and how grounded, and how used he is. To the space he is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, anybody who's been in institutions kind of knows that character, right?
Somebody absolutely.
Who's got the institutional memory.
Yeah.
And every time you need a reference, that's a reference point. Why is Chris there?
He's there because he can't survive on his own. He had this caretaker that took very good care of him when he was younger, and she passed away, and he was left on his own. And at one point, he was homeless. Then he just kind of ended up in this asylum where he's been for a long time. And the death of his caretaker left him mentally stunted. So he's like this 25-year-old man that looks like he should take care of himself and take care of others, but he really can't because he's trapped inside his mind at like 9 years old.
Michaela, one of the seven characters you play is Dion's grandmother. Tell us a little bit about her character.
Absolutely. That was a really fun character to explore because Dion's so fun to work with. We were really interested with this character because she's the only one who speaks throughout this whole show by singing a lullaby. We were interested in the purpose of the lullaby and how that forms the relationship between the caretaker and Dion's character, Chris. And sort of what we landed on was this idea that lullabies are really, really sad, but they're also really beautiful. Mm-hmm. And that sort of was a nice echo for what the piece is about, in that we're talking about really upsetting stories, but in a really beautiful, athletic, artistic way.
Well, of course, on the radio, we're trying to convey as much of this play as possible. And in fact, all of you now are suspended from the ceiling, which is a dramatic effect. Sadly, our listeners can't see that, but you can sing for us. Would you give us a sample of the lullaby?
I would love to. Yeah. You are my balloon, floating through the sky, your shoulder on a cloud. Between the sun and moon, climbing very high, acting very proud. And I love looking at you more than anything, and I know you'll always be my dancer on a string. I will hold your hand and carry you as far as I can. You won't need me long, but I'll hold on.
Michaela Sicoccio singing a lullaby from the production Asylum, co-produced by Burning Coal Theater and Only Child Aerial Theater, on stage at the Murphy School Auditorium in Raleigh through November 1st. It was wonderful watching Dion as Chris throughout that beautiful song and watching him react to that. And it brings us back to how much responsibility you have to really respond to each other. I mean, this whole play comes down to how each of you reacts to mm-hmm. each other. And as you suggested, some of the danger and tension of being, you know, suspended from the air. It's got to be kind of an amazing, as an actor, I would think, this is it. This is what all the training is about.
Oh, yeah,
it's about really reacting,
gift.
And you've got no words to bail you out of this, mm-hmm. right?
People forget that, like, most of our communication is nonverbal, so it's actually super powerful to not have any words and to have people take from that. I don't know, it's surreal. Like, it's nice to have that.
We're talking about the Burning Cold production of Asylum today on The State of Things.
I would also just love to quickly mention that Sophie B. Hawkins wrote that song especially for this show mm-hmm. and that it was arranged for violin by Peter Kahlo. So big thank you to them.
You play a nurse in this play as well.
I play a doctor.
Doctor. And did you do, because I understand that you actually did some research and talked to some medical professionals?
I wish I had beforehand, but I was lucky enough to speak with a woman who came to see the show, and she was a medical professional, and she was speaking to how my character really resonated with her, and how she felt that in mental health today, there's a big disconnect between the people who are actually needing the care and the people who are making decisions about their care. And she felt that my character sort of, and Nikki's as well, because Nikki plays the nurse, how we were exemplifying that in a really real way for her.
Well, and I know that this is not an object lesson in psychiatric care or the politics of incarceration or asylum, but it is a kind of a lesson in how we teach medicine and understand it through language. And yet everything that a practitioner needs, 90% of what a practitioner needs to know comes through the body language of an individual who may or may not have the words to express what's going on with them. But if you watch where their hands are going while they're telling you the story, you might learn a lot. Tell us about, Kendall, the collaboration between you and Burning Cold in this. How did that come about?
Sure. I'm a native of North Carolina. I went to school down the street at Duke. And I'd worked with Burning Cold for a few years and then moved to New York to pursue acting, where I met Nikki in about 2009, and we started Only Child Aerial Theater together. We had developed a couple versions of Asylum, much shorter and less developed. Less fancy, exactly. Much lower budget.
Expensive? Yeah, I
was
going to say expensive.
Much lower budget. I actually was thinking fancy, but I guess that's the
line. But I kept up with Jerry Davis at Burning Cold, and he found out about the project and was interested in bringing it down here, and we were absolutely thrilled. I think this is such a wonderful opportunity on both sides for us to really see this idea developed fully into a full-length piece. To have the time and the space and the resources and the wonderful theater community here to help make that happen. But we are also excited about the chance to bring this new form to the Triangle. I think people may be familiar with circus, you know, and aerial possibilities here. But I don't think it's yet made its way here as a common thing. So.
Well, not as a common thing, although Burning Coal put on a production, a Shakespeare play, mm-hmm. as aerial theater. And that's not uncommon these days. I mean, we may not have seen much of it here yet, but it's growing in terms of popularity, is it not?
Absolutely. And it's finding its way into theater all over the country and actually all over the world. I think Europe is a little bit ahead of us in terms of that.
Yeah. We're playing catch up. That's a big part of our mission in Only Child is to share that aesthetic and just get more people involved as much as we can.
Well, I want to thank you all for being on the program today. Co-writers Kendall Riley and Nikki Miller talking about their new production, Asylum, an aerial theater project co-produced by Burning Cold Theater Company and Only Child Aerial Theater. Also joined by actors Michaela Sicoccio and Dion Relaford Lee. Thank you all for being on the program. Good to talk with you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Asylum is on stage at Murphy School Auditorium in Raleigh through Sunday, November 1st. And you can find out the details at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, a debut novel looks at returning from World War I. We'll talk about it on The State of Things just ahead. Stay tuned.